All right, welcome back to the Man Made Podcast. Today is a cool day. A buddy of mine is here with me. And one of the things that I've talked about for an extended period of time is what a crisis masculinity is in the world that we live in today. And Giuseppe, a friend of mine, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you here. How old are you?
19. Are
you 19 now. You just turned 19, right?
Yep.
So one of the reasons I wanted Giuseppe to come on is he's in real time kind of navigating some of these things that may make it a little bit more difficult to figure out what the fuck it means to be a man anymore. But as I have kind of walked along aside him, felt like he has done it really, really well. He has bit off challenges, never taken the easy way out. So I thought we'd talk through some of that shit. So glad you're here. Thanks for taking time out. You just got back from the big city of Nashville.
Oh yeah, you know, just got to experience everything in the Midwest or around there.
Did your mom freak out about that? Like, what the fuck are you doing in Nashville? Or was she cool with your little adventure?
She was just, she was dying laughing whenever I told her.
Yeah?
But yeah, no, she liked it. She thought it was very funny.
Any ladies? Because you're a ladies' man. That's fair, right? The ladies like Giuseppe.
I mean, occasionally, whenever they're a little delusional, they seem to like
fucking
me.
Liar. He's like, first of all, he's beautiful, and then he's charming. But no love interest in Nashville while you were there?
No, I mean, there were the pretty girls walking down the street, but, I mean, they were all wearing the same thing, so nobody stood out.
Yeah, it's kind of, Broadway, that's kind of the deal. So you hail from Sullivan, Indiana. Yep. So most of the listeners don't know a lot about Sullivan. I don't know a lot. So give me like a thumbnail sketch of what it's like growing up in Sullivan, Indiana.
I mean, whenever I was a bit younger, we have this thing called the Corn Festival, which I mean is a great thing for the Midwest, but that's like the trademark for our town. It has the rides, the games, and it's just a big carnival. And that's what usually is the most exciting part about the year for anybody.
So the Corn Festival is the highlight of the year.
Oh yeah.
Well, please give us details about the Corn Festival.
So my first memory or like stories I've heard from the Corn Festival were I was around 5 years old, and me and my buddy, We went there with our moms, and they were talking, and then me and him just went off, and my mom started freaking out because she'd never had a son that wanted to just go off without her. But it's just the place where kids learn to be free. Like the parents, they all talk, eat the I think they're called Saudi Bobbies, the kebabs, and the kids just go off. You know, there's the like the water gun games. You have the Ferris wheel, the big boat that swings back and forth.
Oh, so it's Carnival 101. Like,
oh, yeah.
This is hardcore.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of your first rite of passage where you get to wander out and make some of your own decisions and do some things that your parents may or may not approve of.
Yeah, and it kind of relates to, like, now. Like, I mean, there was puking involved, which happens to some people my age nowadays, but yeah, no, it's like the first time you really experience going out without just being with your mom or dad.
So when you and I first started chatting, a couple of things going on that I thought, not that the experiences that you were having were interesting, but how you were handling those experiences. One is you were dealing with some depression. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, which was, as we talked more related to the first thing, was like feeling so different than a lot of your peers, not feeling connected, not valuing a lot of the things that they were. So can you talk me through a little bit just kind of what the depression was like for you, and then kind of those differences that you were experiencing, kind of, because you're kind of, my words, not yours, kind of an old soul. Like, for you navigating the high school scene and just what you value and think is important is pretty different than what your average high schooler is thinking about. So unpack those a little bit, if you don't mind.
So sophomore year going into my junior year was probably like the real start of whenever I first started going through like the depression and stuff. And it was almost like I'd been walking through life and everything was going like pretty good. I was used to like having a bunch of friends, small school, everyone knows everyone. But
is that a good thing, bad thing, mixed, a blessing and a curse?
I like it. I like talking to everybody, yeah. And it makes everybody has someone to talk to whenever it's like that. But all through middle school, I was liked by people. I mean, I was a chubby little annoying 13-year-old, but yeah, everybody has to go through it. Canon event, and I don't know, just getting a little bit more mature going into high school. I had started to notice that I was starting to get a little distant with people, and it just kind of brought like a weird feeling of like I was becoming less happy because I wasn't around people, but then whenever I was around people, I was being less happy because I didn't like what they were doing. And it just kind of got me in like a little pickle, and I was just I was feeling really lost. And then I tried to like find out what I like to do, what I want to like, what I can do to be happier on my own. And I mean, it took a while. It took about 2 years, and then now after going through like the typical things that come with depression, like a bunch of anxiety, feeling alone, struggles with parents and all that stuff. And I mean, I just tried to work my way through it, and now I'm able to be alone. Now I'm able to be around people, just kind of stuck through it, I guess.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's interesting is that it's a common experience, especially, you know, at your stage of life, those sort of thing. Obviously, there were some circumstances that we'll get into a little bit more that made it a little bit different. But I think what was interesting for me in you and I's conversations is you're like, you were not looking for the quick, easy fix. Like it, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, but it was like, I want to know what the fuck's going on here. Like I'm going through something, and I want to learn what I need to learn from this. Is that one, do you agree with that? And two, where did that come from?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. It was just very like my mom, I guess she was raised in a very like strict home life. And, I mean, she tells me all the time, mental health whenever she was a kid just wasn't a thing. And, so she had always kind of been like talking to me about like, oh yeah, it's okay. Like this is normal. I used to feel the same way. And once I had started talking with other people my age that had like similar like feelings at the time, they all kind of like correlated. They all had similar experience, but I always felt like mine just didn't really relate to them. And all of their fixes never helped with me. And I didn't like how it was like, if someone was sad about a relationship, they would be like, oh my gosh, I hate this person. I never want to be alone again. How they made me feel. Let me go be with as many people as I can. And like, I tried that type of stuff and it made me feel worse. And I was just like, I'm done. I want to be mature about this. I want to just like write down all my problems and check them off one by one. And
yeah, you did have a particular breakup that was kind of your crossroads of sorts, where you like, fuck this, I'm figuring some shit out. I'm not serial dating or anything out. Like, talk me through that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't really like it was more like a splitting ways, I guess, because, I mean, no romantic stuff going on, but it was very, very hard because it was like, I mean, losing a best friend, that'll be hard, but in the manner of, like, abandoning or getting abandoned, that type of stuff, like, was a lot different than anything I've ever felt. And yeah, it just really showed me that no matter what people say or do up to a certain point, like they top out at what they really see you as. And so I kind of took it upon myself to be like, at the end of the day, I'm the only one that's here 100% for me. Like, I have no other intentions but to make sure I feel good.
So you go through a betrayal, a friend kind of was not there in a time that you needed them. And so that just kind of is like a catalyst for you, like this kind of self-evaluation and I'm going to give myself what I need. I'm going to figure this out so that I don't feel this way, which is fucking, dude, I mean, I'm 50. I don't know if I figured that. What was it? Like, what about that experience were you able to grab a hold to and say, okay, I'm going to figure myself out?
So there was one point whenever I was talking to that person and they had said the phrase somewhere along the lines of, I choose them. It's not you. It never will be you. And that was kind of like a, I'm glad that it happened because it wasn't leaving me on like an edge or anything of, oh, maybe they will be friends again or any of that. It was just very like, you're on your own. That's that. And it made going on my own a lot easier because it felt like I wasn't leaving anyone and wasn't going to be the bad guy. It was just what had to happen.
So, and one of the things that I personally don't think that people your age do enough work in this area. It's like we're so quick to put you on an antidepressant or we're so quick to distract you from the work that needs to be done. And yet for you, it was, is that just a natural part of you? Did you learn that somewhere to say, no, I'm gonna dig into this. Like, I want to understand what I'm feeling, why I'm feeling it, and I want to get to the other side of it. Like, what? That is so unusual for your age group. No offense to your age group, but even in the midst of, I mean, you've got so many things. You've got video games. You've got porn in the palm of your hand. So many things that can distract you from the pain. And yet for you, it just seemed like I want this pain. I want to understand this pain. I want to figure this out.
It definitely wasn't always that way. Especially during my junior year, there was a lot of running from it. And it just seemed that the more I tried to run from it, the more I would go to parties and get blackout drunk or anything like that. Like, it, the next week would be awful because I wouldn't have changed anything. Like, I'm just getting distracted and it's like piling up. Like, if I'm not doing my laundry for this week of, like, say laundry is my mental health or whatever, if I don't do my laundry for this week, next week I'm going to have 2 weeks of laundry and then 3 weeks. And it just felt like it kept adding up. And I just kind of did like take check and be like, nobody's going to come in and just take all this away. And so I just had to try my best and start with there's a saying with like these two guys walked up to a huge pile of shit and one of the guys jumped straight in and the other one was looking at him like he's crazy. And the guy that jumped in turned around. He's like, well, figured with as much shit there is, there's probably a horse under all of it. And that's just kind of how I felt. Like, it was like very just like, there's so much right here that is killing me. There's got to be something I can learn from it.
So did you start with the laundry or where'd you start? Like, what was your first step of like, I'm getting out from under this?
I mean, laundry is still a big problem for me. I'm a teenager, but
I was gonna say, I'm pretty fucking impressed that that was even on your radar.
Yeah, no, I mean, I still have, my mom still gets on to me about that, but I think the first thing was just kind of trying to articulate how I felt because a lot of the times I had no clue. Like, it was like, it was like getting kicked by a ghost. Like I was turning around, I couldn't see where it's coming from, and I was just getting beat by my own head. And I just had to start learning to articulate it and started writing and reading different books about like similar things that I was going through. And that was like the first step that was like, oh, okay. Like I'm starting to see what's making me feel so bad. Like it's like a game plan of what I can do to change it. And yeah, no, that was basically the start of it. Just learning to articulate everything and trying to get as familiar with everything going on in my head as I could.
Well, and I think that's one thing that, you know, most of my work is with men. And that's one of the things I think that I respect the most about you at your age. And age is somewhat relevant, somewhat irrelevant, but it's like that part of it, like, okay, I need to be able to articulate this. Like I need words to be able to describe what I'm going through. Like I need, and that's what's so impressive to me about the work that you did. And that may not seem as significant, but it's like there used to be a time when men were articulate. There used to be a time where men did the actual work of thinking. And you can vouch for this. It's fucking work.
Yeah. No, one of the first like people I got into whenever reading tried to just make me feel better because a teacher that I had started to get close with, she showed me all these different like quotes and stuff from Ralph Waldo Emerson and the whole transcendentalist movement. And that was whenever I was really like, oh, like you can find good just by breaking down what you're seeing and just what you're doing every day. And that was like the kickstart into, wow, like being able to see everything through a different set of eyes and really being able to break down everything I see. Because, I mean, articulation isn't just like being able to talk. Like it's about like, I don't know exactly the definition, but I think it's like to be able to separate things. Like your bones are articulate, makes you move.
Right.
And just being able to not have like a big block of thoughts, being able to have it all separate thoughts, that helped a lot, as in just like just being able to see exactly where I need to go and what I need to do.
And the like articulated movement is movement. And like, your thoughts have to be sorted out. Like, what is it? And so, like, what'd you learn about yourself?
I mean, in the beginning, I learned that I was really, really depressed. Like, it was just like, I kept all of my journaling from my darker times, and I tore them all out of a notebook, and I put them in this big mason jar that I painted all black, and I just put them all in there for whenever I, because I was like my time capsule. Like I had to get better so I could read that whenever I don't feel this way. And I could be like, whoa, like that's possible to feel that way. Let's try our best to, just like a reminder that even if it does get awful, like I'm reading this at a total different mindset, like it will get better. And, I had read that not too long ago or read some of the stuff and it was like, whoa, like I was really depressed and I was really, really, like just negative about every single thing coming down to just the way I walk or talk. And it was like, it just really showed me like how I think about things will affect the way that I see things and like the way I talk. If I'm saying, man, that river is so murky, like I've never seen a murkier river, I won't want to look at the river. But if I say, wow, look at how the sun shines on the river, it glistens so well that it's hurting my eyes, like I love it, then I will be excited going to the river. It's just like the way that I want to think about what I'm going through in my life to the smallest things has an effect on the big picture.
Well, and that's the part for me, like if I get to be proud of you, it's like, so many times you know, it's like, okay, if I'm depressed, it's like, oftentimes there's like this sense, well, okay, that's a mental illness. And if I have a mental illness, then I need to go get help for my mental illness, which I'm not saying that that part of it's not true, but I'm saying for you, what was so keen about your process is you did not run away from your depression. You ran towards that motherfucker. Like you went to war with it. Like I'm not going to distract it with a medication and I'm not saying that people shouldn't take medication. Sometimes that is a profoundly important part of the process, but a part of the process. And the diligence at which you did the work, like this is my depression and yeah, maybe a therapist helps me understand it better or a YouTube video, whatever it is, but this motherfucker's mine and I'm taking control of it. And in that, like found that you had a lot of relationships that you were lonely, but not alone, right? Like, oh, yeah, these are people that I care about, but I'm not really connected to them in meaningful sorts of ways, and found that to be linked to some of your depression.
Yeah, no, definitely. I just started to like realize how exhausting it was to have to like put on a certain act around different groups and being the guy that everyone saw as like a happy-go-lucky guy, it made trying to talk to people about how I was feeling a lot more difficult. And I mean, I just had to realize that not all that comes out of life is through having as many friends as you can. And that was like the big part of separation from a lot of people. And it wasn't in any like direct or like cutting it off right away. It was just kind of like, you know, zoning away a little bit, like talk to him and then leave. And that made, leaving people on good terms was good because I can talk to him now if I see him and it's fine, but there's not the feeling of, oh, yeah, I have to be able to talk to these people, even if I'm not getting anything out of it, even if I feel like I'm going to be mocked as soon as I leave. Like, if I want to talk to him, I can. If I don't want to, I can. And that's what, I don't really know. I was going with that tangent. Got kind of lost.
Well, some of it was that, okay, I don't have as much in common with some of these people. I don't want to conform as much as I had been, but I can still be friends with them. Yeah. It wasn't which I think is like an important part of like figuring one's self out. I don't have to make myself the problem. I don't have to make them the problem. I can socialize with them and realize that I need more from other relationships. And that's just a level of functioning for, you know, a 16, 17, 18 year old kid. Sorry. That it's like, God damn, bro. Those are realizations and course corrections, that most adults aren't capable of it. Did you ever feel helpless?
Oh yeah. Countless nights just laying in bed, listening to music or watching whatever videos on TikTok were making me feel even worse, but I felt good because it explained somewhat how I felt. And it was just like, I mean, that was whenever I was on different antidepressants and it was just like, nothing is working. I don't know what to do. Like, it was just like running on a treadmill. I was like, I'm getting nowhere. And it was, yeah, just completely helpless.
What was the first thing that you did that gave you like some sense of hope?
Definitely the first time I really felt like I was getting a little bit better was in my English 11 class. we were told to try to write something or like a poetry assignment or something. And I had been journaling a little bit, and I was getting a little bit more into reading different people's writing. And I had shared with my teacher this thing that I wrote talking about how people are often lost in conformity, and how the more people try and be what others want them to be, lose parts of themselves. And she was like, wow, that's like really wise of you to be saying at such a young age. And it made me feel like everything that I was suffering through was kind of like leading me somewhere that I needed to be. And that's whenever I really felt like I could get something out of the stuff I'd been going through.
And you did some deep dives. I mean, you read some heavy duty shit. Like, you read Carl Jung, and you read like a lot of philosophy and psychology, and like, and I'm asking you this because I can't get men to do this. Like, what enabled you to take on that challenge? Like, what got you to where I'm going to dig down deep. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to read some thinkers. Was that kind of a natural inclination for you? Did you have to force yourself to do that? Or what was kind of that process?
I really got to give a lot of credit to that English class again, because we had this assignment where we had to get 10 different quotes from different thinkers, whether it's like the realist movement, transcendentalism, romantic, and we had these paint cards, and you jot down some quotes that you find in these books that she would give us, and just put down whatever quotes you felt like spoke the best or just your favorite quotes. And just looking through different books for like a good quote that I thought I really understood, I was like, man, like, people are smart, you know, people know how to think. And that's just kind of what got me into reading more. It was just like hearing what another person has seen in their life does not hurt you at all. Like, you can actually learn just from reading or listening to other people. And I felt the more that I was looking in for different quotes, the more I found quotes that made me feel a little bit better, just showed me how to look at things in different ways. And that's really what got me going, just being able to find things in books that told me things I'd never even thought of.
And kind of as you went through this process and started kind of the discovery of your authentic self, it kind of opened your eyes to some of the superficial aspects of dating and hooking up. And that's kind of and like, I hear guys talk about dating now as if we're like fucking peacocks out in the middle, like showing our feathers. And like, it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, we're regressing on that. So you've kind of had to like kind of navigate some of that. Like, yeah, I'm 19 and chicks are still hot. But the superficiality of it is kind of gross. And like, it is just a game. And like, so talk me through that kind of evolution of what your realizations were through the dating process.
So I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but the 500 Days of Summer, you ever heard of that?
I haven't even heard of it, bro. What the fuck is that?
Well, it's a really good movie for anybody that wants to watch it, because it talks on a bunch of different points of like how different people in both sides of the relationship will think about it differently. And there's this girl named Summer, goes into this relationship thinking very realistically. She's like, I don't want anything serious. I just want to see where this goes. Like, I'm telling you this now so that if you do want something serious and don't want to get hurt, like, now's your chance. And the guy is very romantic, the most romantic guy ever. And he's like, Yeah, that's okay. Like, he loves this girl right off the bat. And so they went through that whole thing of him being like, okay, like, we're dating, right? And she's, no, we're nothing. We're nothing. And they started arguing more and more, but then the next scene would be shower sex. And it's like, as soon as they're done with that, they're laying down in bed. Another argument gets started. They start kissing, and then it's another thing. Like, it's like very, it just shows that someone in the relationship, if they're thinking, this is nothing serious, I'm young, I'm going to live, it will be that way for them. But if there's another person that's just the ultimate romantic, he will think, I'm going to change this girl's mind. And that's how I was my junior year. I really liked this older senior girl. She was hanging out with me, and I felt like I was a stuff.
Yes.
And I was like that guy. I was a romantic. I was really into her, and she was very realist, which I know now, like, being a senior, you don't want to be dating someone in high school whenever you graduate. You want to be able to experience college and just be able to talk to whoever. And I didn't see it that way. I thought she was selfish. And I just kind of was like, after that, I was like, whoa, I'm kind of an idiot right now for thinking I'm going to change this girl's mind. And I just kind of stopped thinking, oh, I'm going to marry whoever I see, because that's how everyone was talking about stuff. And I just kind of was like, whoa, like, so many people make these promises through just lust and just young age. You're obsessed with each other. And I never really had that experience after watching that movie. It was like, it opened my eyes. And I was like, whoa, people can just not want what you want. And I started to just be the way of, I'm going to see where this goes. And then watching other relationships from the third party, and I was like, what they have is not what I want. And the more I saw relationships grow, the worse they were getting. And then I just kind of checked out, and I was like, until I find someone without looking, I'll just be fine with being the third party.
Yeah, and which is, again, just one of those fascinating things, because it's, you know, at your stage in life, peer acceptance and then, you know, starting to peer bond, those kinds of things are developmentally significant. And it's like when I talk to guys your age about dating, which, God damn, I don't know how y'all fucking do it with Snapchat and Twitter. I don't know if you use Twitter. I don't even fucking know. But it's like, what? I don't even get what you people are doing. Like, I try to get a guy, like, I've got clients your age, and I try to get them to, like, go talk to a girl. And it's like, I mean, their level of resistance to that of, like, oh, just go up and talk to her. Like, it's like, first of all, I couldn't survive in your dating environment because I don't even know how to use Snapchat or what else y'all use?
Instagram.
What the fuck? How do you date on Instagram? I don't even know if I want to know the answer to this.
I think Instagram is more like a, wow, that girl's really pretty. Let me try and get her Snapchat. And it's just,
well, so,
like,
then I advanced to Snapchat?
Yeah, no one uses numbers anymore, which is weird because I feel like numbers are a little bit more connected because you can just add.
So if I'm walking up to a girl, what do I say? Give me your Snap? Is that? Or can I get your Snap? What? I don't even know the sentence to say.
I mean, the last girl that I got her Snapchat from at orientation, it was just...
Tell me about that, fucker.
We were in the same group, and I just really wasn't connecting with anyone, and she had some cool shoes on, and I just wasn't thinking about anything besides, whoa, I like those shoes. I mean, I like shoes. And I was like, hey, like, I like your shoes a lot. And she's like, oh, thanks. They're a little bit dirty now. Like, I wore them to a party, and they got trashed there. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, usually you don't wear shoes you like to a big party. Should have been a little bit smarter about that.
Ooh, well, there you go.
Yeah, I'm just...
Hey, man.
Got to be honest.
Got to tell the truth.
And that just kind of sparked up, like, a little conversation, and then we were just chatting the whole time. And near the end, I was like, hey, like, I'd like to stay in touch. Could I, like, add you on Snapchat, or can you give me a Snapchat? Yeah.
You know, now what? What do I do now that I've added you on Snapchat? I swear to God, this is so fucking bizarre to me.
The other day she posted on her, she posted a picture of her and her boyfriend. And so I was like, oh, whoa. Like,
okay, well, that's one thing you can learn, I guess, is like, okay. But one thing I tell guys is the first rule of buying a car is you've got to be willing to not buy the car, right? It's like if you, you know, if I walk onto a car lot and I'm like, I got to have it, I got it, like I'm fucked, right? And so many guys are that desperate when it comes to dating. And it's like, if you're that fucking desperate, you got no business dating. Like you got to go figure yourself out. You got to figure out like you have to actually do some thinking. You have to like as goofy as it sounds, you have to answer the question, who am I? You got to like do some fucking work. And for you, those were just such natural processes of like, okay, I'm going to figure myself out. I'm going to figure my depression out. I'm going to figure out this dating shit and where I figure into it. And I don't like any of the existing models. And that willingness to like really do the work. If you were going to give any guys your age, if you were going to give them a piece of advice, a couple of pieces of advice, what would it be?
On relationship?
Just or fucking anything. Life. Like life according to Giuseppe.
I mean, first off, start writing about whatever you're doing. And it doesn't have to be like storytelling or poems or anything. Just like if you had a good day, write about why it was good and just try and look back on your day the best you can and explain it. And if you have bad days, that's an even better day to write. And yeah, just be more observant about yourself and people around you, because a lot of times people may have ill intentions without you knowing, and you may have ill intentions yourself and just be kind of self-sabotaging without even noticing, going to parties back to back, and then you feel like crap for work, and then your day is ruined because you're angry at work. You go home, argue with your mom, go to bed angry, wake up angry. It's like so many small things, if you don't think about what you're doing, will tear you down.
And it's funny because a lot of times guys won't take inventory like that. It's like, yeah, man, I've been drinking for 4 days and like, all, and it's like, yeah, but I'm feeling kind of like, I don't know, my mom's on my ass. It's like, well, maybe you're the asshole, but it's like those little modifications of just being aware. The things that I would have you learn from Giuseppe that he has done exactly right is like he approached his depression not from a position of I have a mental illness. Like, because the mistake that I see so many people make is like if they get depressed or they have some anxiety or sometimes, you know, these are common life experiences, right? Depression and anxiety, unfortunately, are part of the fucking human experience. But that did not become an excuse for you. It wasn't, well, I can't do my laundry because I'm depressed, or I'm shitty to my mom because I'm depressed, or that never seemed to enter into your way of thinking.
I mean, some points, whenever like the peak of my depression, I was very like that. But then whenever I needed to start getting better, I noticed that I had to stop all that stuff and it's just like get going, no matter if you feel bad or not, just go.
And that would be, and you got there. And I would tell you that if you're listening to Giuseppe and you're resonating with some of the struggles that he's talked about, like, yes, mental illness is real. Mental health is real. There are certain aspects of living this life that are just uncomfortable. And we get depressed. And sometimes we need to be more curious about that. We need to take more responsibility about what do I have to do to fix this depression. Now, get help along the way. I'm not saying don't get help. I mean, that's my fucking day job if I didn't believe in the help. But sometimes the expectations are unrealistic. And sort yourself the fuck out. One thing that I can tell you through this process that I've observed with Giuseppe is that he has figured out who he is. Like he didn't ask the question, he answered the question. This is who I am, this is how I want to live my life. One thing I would be interested to know is how you handle distraction. Like, I mean, there's so much distraction with YouTube, and I mean, I'm showing my age by saying YouTube, but it's like gaming and porn and just everything that you have access to through the palm of your hand. Do you intentionally navigate those? Are they not very distracting to you? What's been your approach to that?
It's definitely like a big distraction in places that I should be uncomfortable. Like if it's like, if I'm around a bunch of people and it's quiet, no one's really talking, everyone thinks, oh, I'll be on my phone and I'll just be out of it. It takes you somewhere else. And if I notice that I'm doing that, I've really tried to just put my phone down and sit there and just kind of be there. I mean, whenever I'm alone, if I really have nothing to do, I like to watch YouTube, and it's usually like podcasts or Jordan Peterson talking or different stuff like that. And I don't know. I never really try to distract myself too much with just like mindlessly scrolling. If I'm going to be doing anything on my phone, I'm either trying to talk to people that I actually want to talk to or just try and find something that I can learn a little bit about. I mean, I know YouTube is no book, but there is stuff you can learn. And
God, there's so much fucking information. And it's interesting because throughout human existence, most information has been transmitted orally. Mm-hmm. You know, the written word is fairly new, and especially the written word on the broad scope that it is. I mean, things have been transmitted through story for, you know, like since hieroglyphics. I mean, primitive man, like all of those kinds of things, picture and story. And it's like our brains are really designed to process information more effectively. That, and if that's for you, God damn, man, there's so much information available. Do the fucking work. But you are mindful about the distraction. Like that's not something that you're just blind to.
Yeah. And I've definitely unfollowed a lot of like the accounts and stuff that are just instant distractions. And like Instagram, that's the only thing that I'll get caught kind of mindlessly scrolling. But my killer is I really like to look at old cars, like old Porsches and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And man, like I can just sit down on Twitter and watch the different like edits from Tokyo and stuff of them driving through the mountains and drifting with all those old songs playing. And that's one thing that'll have me just looking at my phone mindlessly.
All right. Oh, yeah. Good to know your weaknesses.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I just try and stay more in the moment around people and just, I don't know, we're on our phone a lot one-on-one, and that's just not good.
Yeah, and if you're going to be mentally healthy in this day and age, you have to have a plan around your device. You have to have time to disconnect. You have to have time where it just is not, like, it's not in the palm of your hand. Well, I am eternally grateful for you coming on and telling your story. I'm so appreciative of you giving some insights into what your struggles were and how you navigated them. So thank you. Appreciate that. Part of the man-made objective is in helping people, men, become better men. Is talking to guys that have done the work, that have sorted themselves out, that have done the journaling, that have reworked their thoughts, that have taken obstacles and decided to run at those obstacles. And Giuseppe is one of those men. You can be one of those men as well. If you're tired of excuses, if you're tired of trying to find easy ways out and you really want to do the work, areyoumanmade.com. We will help you in the process. You are not alone, and we will talk to you next time.